Pray with me. Lord, may the words of our mouths and the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. In the third chapter of Ecclesiastes, "For everything there is a season, and a time for every matter under heaven. A time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck up what is planted." When I was little, I was awestruck by the way my grandma knew the name of every flower. Anywhere we went, family vacations or just around the neighborhood, she seemed to know. Gladiolas, lilies of the valley, hibiscus. Like Lady Wisdom herself, these things seemed as natural as remembering the names of her many grandchildren. She didn't have to pause to remember or examine. She just knew, sharing the knowledge with us on our walks, greeting the flowers and plants like old friends. Of course, to name something is to know it. She still does. She knows just how much water plants need, when to trim them back, when to let them run wild, who wants more sun and who wants more shade. Her backyard garden blossoms with new surprises every spring, and every winter her living room becomes a veritable greenhouse of lilies and spider plants, Christmas cacti and violets. When I was little, I thought this whole flower knowledge thing was some sort of rite of passage, as if I would hit a certain age and just know all the names of all the flowers. I would grow taller, I would grow wiser, and I would grow in plantly awareness. But as I realize I am technically an adult, and my last growth spurt is a distant memory, I now know that that's not how it works. Like most things, learning the world of flowers and plants is something which requires time, attention, patience, and devotion. Not unlike learning to love people. My grandma is something of an expert on that as well. She loves people well because of, and sometimes in spite of, knowing who they really are. There is still time. Time with my grandma, thank God, and time to learn about the plants, to learn about people. To know, as my grandma does, who needs more sun and who needs more shade. When to clip things back, and when to let them roam wild, how to know them, and how to love them anyway. There is still time.
A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to tear down and a time to build. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to heal, to build, to laugh, and to dance. Those seem like good biblical messages. To celebrate life, to live with joyful abundance. This seems like good news to me. It seems like the God I like best, the one who doesn't let anything terrible happen to me or the people I love. But a time to kill, to tear down, to weep, to mourn? How can there be a right time for destruction, for devastation, for burying my loved ones, for standing there with tears streaming down my face? Seems it's human nature to want to jump over that part of our human experience and get as quickly as possible to the time to heal, build, laugh, dance. It's hard, hard, hard to struggle through the darker part of that equation, to sit uncomfortably with the difficult questions about life and faith that pain often raises. How can there be a right time for everything that feels so wrong? Is there a time to allow for bleak and looming experiences? An appropriate time to flail around, trying to make sense out of senselessness? What about a time to arch back in anger, even rage? A time when I need desperately to assign blame, to hold someone responsible for what's wrong, even if, or especially when, God is the one I want to blame. Is there an appropriate time to kill off a dearly held vision of myself, or of the world, or of God, because that idealized view just doesn't work anymore? A time to tear down old scaffoldings that no longer explain my challenged understanding of myself, or God, or life? Is there an appropriate time to weep and mourn, not just for those whom I have loved and lost, but for the hopes and expectations that have been shattered and left in shards at my feet, for the way I thought my life should turn out, but hasn't, for the way I thought God was, but apparently isn't? How is it that a loving God lets me wrestle so hard with these really big questions? Where is God when I'm listening for answers, but hear nothing but silence? Does God hear me? Does God know my pain? Perhaps only God really knows that pain. Perhaps only God can fully understand the unique struggle of each soul, the sometimes long and tortuous journey from darkness to light, from mourning to dancing.
A time to scatter stones and a time to gather them. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to search and a time to give up. A time to keep and a time to throw away. I guess on some level, a lot of couples know that it won't last. They know when they are just too different, off balance, something just doesn't fit. Still, that doesn't make saying goodbye any easier. Every couple is different, and so is every divorce. For some couples, it's just over in a flash. One party leaves, and then it's just over. Others seek each other for years, through the tumbling maze, the labyrinth pain of a failing marriage. Failing. That's a particularly cruel word, isn't it? As if the complexities of human love could be reduced to something as simple or straightforward as a test, and you either pass or fail. Even for the tragic losses like the end of a relationship, can there still be something of God's right timing in it? Even in the loneliness and the moments of regret and the darkest hours, God remains. I have to tell you that the hope I felt after going through my divorce came in the blossoming of some daffodils at my house the spring after my husband left. They had been planted for years, but before, only stems had come up. Probably they were just planted too deep. But that next spring, they blossomed. And every time I look at a daffodil, I think of the hope message that I felt God was sending to me, that I was going to be okay. God's resurrection promise remains within our daily lives, that whatever has been, we can become something better, brighter, truer to the life God hopes for us to have.
A time to tear and a time to sow, a time to be silent and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. It's hard for me to envision the peaceful, loving version of Jesus, the baby of last week's nativity, standing in for a God who would claim that there is a right time for war. Yet there are times when the oppression of the poor grows too heavy to bear. There comes a time when we must stand up and not only speak out, but cry out, no more. To tear at the chains that bind, to speak out against oppression, to hate the walls which separate us, and to declare war on the casual, callous, and self-centered approach to life that we convince ourselves is acceptable. The time is now to mend old grudges and reconcile. The time to speak words of wisdom and compassion to and with the voiceless. The time to love one another without thought of how it might benefit us. And a time to seek a peace that is not just keeping nightmares at bay a little longer, but a peace that is true and lasting. The right time for God's justice is always right now. The time to step bravely closer to the truth of God's kingdom, the perfect season for that is upon us, and the perfect day is today. For everything, there is a season and a time for every matter under heaven. God is in the silence, in the holiness, and in the cacophony. God is in the moments of connection and in the gaps of our lives. God is in our nearest loves and the most threatening of strangers. God's timing is full of mystery, and God's heart is prepared for our questions, our worries, our sorrow, and our thanks, all the time. Pray with me. Loving God, we give you thanks for this new year and for your perfect and mysterious timing. Amen.